I love being in church on Sunday morning. There's nowhere else I want to be. And it may be because I grew up this way. I'm grateful for that. It was just what we did pretty much every Sunday. And I found myself thinking about that church I grew up in and was formed in. And when I was a teenager, we got this new to the ministry assistant minister. He was young. He was free-spirited. He was kind of radical, at least for us back in those days. Everyone loved him. Before he'd begin preaching, he would say this prayer: God, grant us the courage to seek the truth, come when it may, cost what it will. Isn't this what we are meant to be about in life? Seeking after what is good and right and true, trying to follow that way as best we can, especially and particularly when it is difficult and costly. We live in a time when it seems that cutting corners and finding the quick fix is the dominant paradigm. But I hope and I have faith that doing the right thing will never go out of style. Come when it may, cost what it will. And we get chances to practice this every day, don't we? In little ways, at least, in the choices that we make. There's a word for this practice of paying attention and considering options and finding our way to making good or better choices. It's called discernment. I heard that word so much in theological school. Discernment, which simply means figuring out which way is the right way, at least for you and in that moment. Discernment is not just for individuals, though it's good for us as individuals, but it's also good for families and communities. What would it be like if nations practiced greater discernment? It could be messy, as discernment also is, but think about the conversations. If you said, who do we want to be? And how do we figure that out? And how do we find our way forward? Discernment starts with questions like, what is most important? Who are we? Where do we want to be going? How are we going to get there? What's the next step we could take? And what is our goal? Questions we could be asking more of around here, right? Discernment takes a lot of careful listening. Listening to your companions and listening to that own inner voice that each of us have. Listening for that mysterious spirit which does whisper in our voices, whisper in our ears and inside us and to us from time to time. And sometimes, particularly if you're not listening, that voice can come as more like a thunderclap, right? When you really need to hear it. If you've ever had a hunch or heard a still, small voice or seen what seemed to you like a sign, you know what I'm talking about, right? If you've ever had any of these, then you have experienced what I would name as a calling. If you've ever felt compelled to repair what's been broken or restore what's been desecrated, if you've ever tried to make amends for a wrong or follow a longing or a joy, then you have heeded a call. If you've ever been led to a place that you didn't plan to go, then you know what I'm talking about, right? We like to think we are in charge of our lives, and to some degree, we are. We get to make choices. We make so many choices, don't we? We, in many situations, do have free will. And still, it's not all up to us as individuals, is it? Thankfully. I do believe that our lives are, in mysterious ways and in beautiful ways, intertwined with others. That we are being led and nudged and sometimes dragged, sometimes kicking and screaming, we're being dragged to the places we are meant to go. The Jungian mystic Robert Johnson, he had a name for these leadings that he felt in his own life. He called them slender threads, and he described them this way: the numinous forces that exist outside of our conscious control, sometimes called fate, destiny, God, guardian angel, guiding hand, or patron saint. One of the things we hope you do here is to be attuned to these leadings, to these callings, to these numinous forces, these slender threads. Our worship theme for this month is comfort and discomfort. And in my experience, a calling will bring plenty of both, discomfort and comfort. And I sense that they belong together. Around age 40, I had a relatively comfortable life, but underneath it was a restlessness that kept tugging at me. Eventually, I felt drawn to head off to theological school, which freaked me out, to say nothing of my spouse. She was freaked out by this too. But once I arrived there, I knew almost immediately that it was where I was meant to be. I felt surprisingly alive there and joyful. The first day was September 11th, 2001. So if it wasn't already like some heat turned up, that kind of brought things to an emotional and experiential boil, I would say. That first year and those 3 years were so mind-expanding that I regularly had the sensation that the top of my head was just about to blow off. And in the years since, through comfort and discomfort, I've had this sense of just deep gratitude for finding the way that is the one for me. And I hope you are finding or have found that yourself. I hope you have some sense of what I'm talking about. The sense that after some time of searching and struggle, a day comes when you can look around and say, "Here I am, where I'm meant to be. Here I am, where I'm meant to be." And you know, we humans are comfort-seeking creatures. There's nothing wrong about that. I think it must be part of our animal nature. I think of a time years ago when I went fishing, deep-sea fishing, with my brother Bobby off the coast of North Carolina, where he lives. He has his captain's license, and he has access to a big sport fishing boat that he takes care of. It's part of his work. And so one day, we took that boat miles offshore out to the Gulf Stream in search of big fish, which we never found, but it was an amazing day. But one thing I noticed was all day, Bobby kept looking at this little dial on the dashboard of that boat. He was marking the temperature of that deep blue Gulf Stream water, trying to find water that was between 75 and 78 degrees. Because that's the temperature that big blue marlin are most comfortable in. Are we as humans that different? Maybe it's not 75 to 78 degrees, but we each have places and things that make us comfortable. And we rightfully like being in those places, which are good for us. And if we get too comfortable in them, if we spend too much time in them, they can become ruts, can't they? Thankfully, we also have self-awareness and we have choice, and we're able to hear nudges and calls and understand that there is more to life than simply seeking comfort. That discomfort is an inevitable and valuable part of the journey, too. The Presbyterian minister Frederick Buechner points out that we each have a lot of voices around us and coming into our ears and hearts and souls, vying for our attention. And he says the trick is finding out which voice is the voice of God or Spirit, the inner light, the higher power, whatever name it is you use to describe that fathomless mystery. Buechner wrote this. He said, "The kind of work God usually calls you to is the kind of work that you need most to do and that the world needs most to have done. Neither the hair shirt nor the soft berth will do. The place God calls you to is the place where your deep joy and the world's deep hunger meet, where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet." What I know about following a call is that it will invite you deeper and deeper into the world, that there will be moments of gladness and comfort, but also plenty of struggle and discomfort too. And at the same time, the awareness that you wouldn't trade this for anything. You wouldn't trade this for anything. And a call, as personal as it is, it inevitably invites you beyond yourself to stretch and grow and find ways, your ways, of addressing the deep hungers that are all around us. I love the call narratives that you find in the Hebrew Bible, the stories of the prophets being called by God to do the work that is needed in that particular time. I've made this point before, but I love the fact that almost all of these prophets initially try to get out of their calling. They're so beautifully human. They try to talk God out of it, saying things like, "Who? Me? You must be mistaken." Like Moses, remember the story of Moses? He's out tending the flock, minding his own business, when all of a sudden he happens upon a burning bush, which is miraculous because it's burning, but it's not being burned up. And then, even more miraculous, he hears the voice of God calling to him from out of the bush, "Moses, Moses." And Moses replies, "Here I am. Here I am." And then God tells Moses, "Take off your shoes because you are standing on holy ground." So he does, and then God says, "I have seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I've heard them crying out because of their slave drivers and have come to rescue them." And God says, "I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of bondage in Egypt. But what does Moses say? Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? And God says, like our choir anthem said this morning, I will be with you. But that's not enough for Moses. He asks more questions, and God persists not taking Moses' no for an answer. Moses, who became such a hero of the Hebrew people, he finally says, oh, my Lord, please send someone else. I love that. Because it is so human, isn't it? We sense a call to something, but then we shrink back because we doubt our fitness for the task. When others point out your gifts and encourage you to follow where they lead, or when you have a dream stirring in your soul that asks you to stick your neck out and go through some place of uncertainty and probably discomfort, how often do we doubt our gifts and downplay our abilities? That kind of false modesty, that who, me? Why do we do this? It has to do with fear, doesn't it? And our human tendency to stick with comfort rather than risking discomfort. But isn't there an even greater risk? In doubting your own gifts, you could miss your own calling. If doubting your own gifts is something that you are good at, then please hear this. Our world needs what you have to offer. There's nobody else like you in the whole world. We need what you have to offer. And yes, it will feel like a risk to step out of your comfort zone, but only when you do this, when you dare this, can you start to see the benefits and the blessings that are waiting for you and for others. To say nothing of the liberation and the joy that will follow. We heard a version of this in Rebecca Parker's prophetic call, which begins with the observation that we can use our gifts for good and for ill. Choose to bless the world, she says. The choice to bless the world is more than an act of will, a moving forward into the world with the intention to do good. It is an act of recognition, a confession of surprise, a grateful acknowledgement that in the midst of a broken world, unspeakable beauty, grace, and mystery abide. There is an embrace of kindness that encompasses all life, even yours. And while there is injustice, anathematization, or evil, there moves a holy disturbance, a benevolent rage, a revolutionary love, protesting, urging, insisting, that which is sacred will not be defiled. That's something, if I was more of a protester, that's something I'd like to put on a big sign and carry it down the street. That which is sacred will not be defiled. There is all around us this sacred presence. The country, this country they call life, Rilke said, you will know it by its seriousness. The choices that we make are serious. They have consequences. The stakes are high. We have these days that we have been given. We have these callings that are waiting for us. What will we do with them? What will we do with them? We are here to live our lives as fully and courageously as we can, to follow our callings where they lead through comfort and discomfort. And along the way, to trust that in our seeking, there will be finding, that in our journeying, there will always be companions, that along the way, there will be life abundant. May this be our prayer, and may it be our song. Ever singing, march we onward, now and always. Amen.